Today on episode 174 of Smash Cuts, the man, the myth, the Kentucky legend himself, Austin Burke, makes his return right after this. Welcome back to Smash Cuts, episode 174. Austin, how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. I am not daddy daycaring today. The baby's gone. The wife's gone. Love them to death. But they said, we're going to let you record in peace. So it's nice, Joe. It's really nice.
Austin, I was going to say, last time we recorded, I believe Riley wasn't born yet. So This is, you've had a whole whirlwind of the past couple of months, I'm sure.
I've changed a lot. My body, my brain, my mentality, everything's different. But at the end of the day, Joe, we still love movies. That's what it's all about. I'm more in the kid space right now. Miss Rachel and Bluey. That's the space I'm in. So
listen, Bluey, I'm actually a fan of with, a lot of kids in my family. I'm very, very fond of Bluey.
It's really good. Like genuinely a good show. It's awesome.
So I'm interested in whether fatherhood has changed the way that you approach film. So, how would you have thought of Madam Web pre-Riley versus now having Riley?
Well, let me tell you, I feel like before a child, I would have appreciated the film a lot more. Now, there are genuinely movies that I watch now. I rewatched Prisoners the other day, and it's always been one of my favorite films. But approaching it with the perspective of having a daughter now, and then the movie being about someone's daughter who gets taken away from them, that changes not only my mentality, but it allows me to appreciate certain movies more. And I've always been a dad movie guy, but I guess now that I'm actually a dad and I watch dad movies, I feel like I'm more of a dad movie guy now than I ever have been. So, sure. So I really do. I approach movies a lot differently, and I'm already thinking about what I'm going to show her first when she becomes the competent age when it all kicks in. So I'm looking at Disney movies. I'm looking at Pixar films and maybe Prisoners to freak her out a little bit.
Start them young, right? That's incredible. I didn't even think about that, once you step into fatherhood, it probably does change the way that those pieces of films and the background of those characters is presented and how that hits. That's got to be a weird recognition on your part to then see a film that you've seen multiple times and maybe understand the dynamic a little bit differently than you may have prior. That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to talk about some fun films today, but why don't we kick things off? We're about a week out from the 96th annual Oscars, and there were a little bit of surprise in there. I was following you on Twitter as you were posting some, so I know which ones you were kind of pumped about there. But overall, let's start off with the overall ceremony. What were your thoughts on this?
It was interesting. So what I do during the Oscars is I'm actually working during the Oscars because I'm recording, I'm editing, so I miss some of the monologues, I miss some of the speeches, but the speeches that I was able to see were absolutely fantastic. The Jimmy Kimmel, he's done it a couple of times, so we're kind of used to the flow, and I think he's got a good idea how to keep it going. Still went 30 minutes over, which at this point, I just think the ceremony keeps lasting too long. Let's make it a crisp 3 hours. Let's allow it to move. But I think it moved well. The performances, the musical performances were fantastic. Gosling singing I'm Just Ken was legendary. I mean, it was, and I like Barbie a lot, not like the world's biggest fan. It was the coolest thing I've seen at the Oscars in 5 to 10 years. I loved it that much. But I think doing it an hour earlier really, really helped. And so I hope they keep that going. I know a lot of people are about tradition and it's got to start at 8 o'clock, all this, but it helped me with my editing and getting my video out there, but it also helped, I think, the flow of the show. And I wasn't as tired by the end. So I hope they do that next year, maybe move it up a week or two, because by the time it gets March, man, I'm thinking Dune Part Two is already out. Let's move on.
Next year. I'm actually already I was thinking about that, right? I was thinking about the time frame, and 2 weeks would be great, a month and a half would be great, and I understand the challenges there with you need to give the previous year's films time to breathe, time to campaign, time for the voting or nominations and voting. But man, when you're discussing films that came out a year and 3 months prior at the Oscars, it really is challenging. And you're exactly right, Dune Part Two was dominating the interwebs at that point, with already talk of next year's Oscars and the runs that the film would make in acting and editing and just about everything, let's be honest. So I'm with you there. That was a little challenging this year. I'll say I did enjoy it a lot more this year. Jimmy Kimmel, I'm done with in a way. His jokes just do not land. And I think it makes things a little bit awkward, but you're exactly right. In my opinion, he does have an idea of how this should flow, which I do appreciate. There were a couple really funny bits. The John Cena bit I thought was really funny. They did a good job landing that.
It was so good.
I mean, Ricky Stenicki aside, John Cena has some pretty good comedic intellect there. And so that was pretty exciting. The Kate McKinnon America Ferrara piece. Did you catch this where?
Yes.
The Jurassic Park being a documentary. I loved that. I thought that was, oh no, not you too. I thought that was hilarious. The one thing that I really enjoyed the most out of all this, in addition to the Ken performance, which was phenomenal, the way that the acting categories were presented, having previous winners speak to each of the nominees, you know, some of them were a little bit better than others because you wonder about the relationship that that presenter had to the actual nominee. But still, it was such a unique and, heartfelt way, I think, to recognize those individuals.
Well, and they're really talented people too. So some people injected humor in there. Some people were like really genuine and heartfelt. I thought the Nick Cage, Paul Giamatti, where he's saying, I would have done that too. That was amazing. And so, yeah, I'm with you. That was such a different way of doing it. Part of me did miss, I like this style better, but part of me did miss the clips. So they'll show a clip of that part of the performance. And I'm wondering, I'm like, oh, which one is Killian going to get? Which one is Paul going to get? And they didn't do clips. So I was like, man, I missed the clips. But, you know, bringing back these iconic winners and maybe people that kind of had to do with the person that they were talking about, that was really cool. And so I hope they learn from this year's good and bad, like every year, and they implement what really worked and what allowed this one to stand out. I think this is one of the better ceremonies we've had in the last 4 to 5 years, to be honest with you, because my issue with every year is it doesn't flow well. I get bored halfway through the ceremony. And I think this one actually, even though it was long, I do think it flowed really well. So yeah, I think they should take notes and repeat some of these things that worked.
Yeah, it was the highest rated telecast in four years, I believe, which is good. It's a better, trending up is better than trending down, as they have been. It's funny, if they added the clips back in and then followed with sort of those short little speeches from the previous winners, I would be okay with that. There's certain choices that they could make that would make me okay with a longer ceremony because it's more heartfelt and more, kind of celebrating not only the actors, but celebrating the films that they're in as well. In talking about that, we have to talk about how Al Pacino's Best Picture speech. Oh, that was a little rough, the delivery there. And the fact that they didn't even recap the nominees. I get that they're introducing them all evening, but the lack of introduction of the nominees right before you announce the winner was really an odd choice.
That's something where I if the ceremony's got to go on a little longer because you can bring up who was actually nominated for Best Picture, because if you're watching that for the first time, say you just tuned in just to see who wins Best Picture and you don't know any of the nominees, like a lot of general audience members, like if my mom and dad are watching, they probably wouldn't have known who were nominated. They're just going to watch the end of the show to see who wins. And then Al Pacino's up there like, hey, Oppenheimer. And it's just like, okay, who was nominated? Who's in the, you know, what would have been really funny, Joe? Pacino would have said, he would have said Maestro. And then everyone's just like, because just one of the movies that no one expected. And everybody's just like, all right, keep reading the nominees, Pacino. And everybody's, and he walks off stage. And then Maestro, Bradley Cooper's screaming, I just feel like that entire final 10 minutes was so poorly handled and so awkward because Oppenheimer deserved its moment. It's a movie that everyone knew was going to win. You get the buildup, you get all of the movies listed off, and then Oppenheimer scream celebration. Instead, it's Pacino getting out of bed, and then when it's over, he goes back to bed. So I was really underwhelmed by the way that finale was handled.
if I recall, I mean, I was a little tired by that point, but if I recall, the way he did it was he opened it and said, "Oppenheimer." That's what it says. He said something like that.
He was asking a question. He phrased it as a question. So he's expecting, it sounded like he expected an answer. And it's like, dude, you just announced the winner, man. It was so weird. Oh, it was so strange. Can I give a shout out though to the Michael Keaton, Danny DeVito bit with the Batman, the looks that he's given, the ascot. Oh, that was such a fantastic part. I loved it.
Yes,
I loved it.
That was really great. There were definitely some good moments that I think were a little bit more, you know, and the example of that too, is that reaches across generations. And that was really well done, especially in a night that was going to be dominated by, you know, Barbie, especially with the Ken conversation afterwards. But yeah, they did a good job with that part. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The biggest surprise of the evening, I would say, was Emma Stone taking Best Actress. It wasn't necessarily a surprise that wasn't on the board, but it seemed like it was Lily Gladstone's, you know, to run away with. She didn't grab it. What do you think of Emma taking that, taking that big award? And also, I just personally loved when they first panned over to her. She was completely shocked. I think genuinely surprised.
Yes. I was happy. I think Emma Stone gives the best performance of her career. And you're talking to a La La Land just fanatic. And so that takes a lot. And I think, you know, Poor Things wasn't my favorite movie of last year. I really enjoyed it. But to see her rewarded for that was really awesome. That being said, I put out a whole video, Joe, on why I thought Lily Gladstone was going to beat Emma Stone. Mm-hmm. And now who looks like an idiot now? Me. But it was all lining up perfectly. If you take what's happened prior and all of the momentum that Lily had going in, and also, and I don't want to say this to make it sound like, oh, she was going to win just because of the narrative, but that was a big crucial part, because it was huge if she would have gotten a victory, not only for all of those things, but for her career. And I mean, she went in there and out-acted Leo and Robert De Niro. So we're taking nothing away. And some people were like, oh, they didn't give it to her because this, this, and this. No, we're taking nothing away from her performance. She got the nomination. And frankly, I would have been happy if she would have won. But you're talking such a cram-packed category this year. I thought a lot of the nominees should have had a chance. I know they didn't. It came down to two. But a really good category. Emma Stone giving the best performance of her already Academy Award-winning career. And something that happened that shouldn't have caught a lot of people off guard in terms of quality, but it's all about the momentum, the precursors, the buildup, and the fact that Lily had the momentum going in, not Emma Stone. That's why it was so shocking. So I was happy because of the win, but I was shocked because nothing, I mean, the SAG Awards did it in for me. I'm like, oh, Lily's going to win this. Nothing told me that Emma's going to win until we're going through these categories and Poor Things takes it, Poor Things takes it, Poor Things. And I'm like, oh, they like Poor Things. So by the time we got to that costume design win, I'm thinking, Poor Things, is Emma Stone's going to win this because they really, really like that movie. And Killers didn't win an Oscar.
Completely snubbed.
Crazy. Wow. Shocked. I was shocked.
I mean, personally, I can't say that I'm upset about that. That wasn't my favorite movie of the year. Sure. I thought that's fair. It fumbled a little bit. But you're exactly right. As Poor Things is racking up these technical awards, you're like, whoa, what's happening here? And I, for the life of me, will never be able to figure out the Academy voter, because I look at a movie like Poor Things and I say, it's a little too sexual. It's a little too outlandish for the Academy voter. And I can understand technicals because they're very well deserved. And I'm not saying that Emma Stone's win isn't deserved. It's just not one that I would have predicted that the base of Academy voters would go for. It just completely shocked me.
Someone asked me during my live stream recently, Austin, do you think Nosferatu can get an Oscar nomination? Because that's a really dark and gritty looking movie that's coming out this year. It's black and white, it's horror. And I'm thinking like, nah, the Oscar doesn't really go for genre films, blah, blah, blah. They only really did Get Out. And but then I'm thinking, man, Poor Things is... Poor Things is not the conventional Academy Oscar nominated movie. I know it's Yorgos Lanthimos, but Nosferatu is being directed by a notable director on that level. So I feel like we're shifting in a different direction with the Oscars, and it's been building for the last couple of years with the Wakanda Forever noms and the Joker noms. And this year we've got Joker 2. Who knows what's going to happen with that? But we could be looking at and then the victories, right? Everything Everywhere All at Once and Oppenheimer, two bigger blockbusters, but consensus wise, they were the best movies of the year, whether they were my personal favorites or not. So we're going in a direction to where I think they're reflecting more so now than ever what the general audiences think of films. And we're always going to get those very artistic movies and things that win awards. But I think a lot of people have been really happy over the last 2 years. And the first time for me was Parasite, where, oh my God, they reflected what most people thought. And then they took a couple of years and went different directions. But now the last 2 years it's feeling what the consensus actually is what's winning. So that was, it's really cool to see that. And so I'm excited for this year, Dune Part 2 and Nosferatu and some of these outlandish genre films. I'm excited to see what happens.
And let's not forget, they just announced Yorgos and Emma back on the back in the cinema this summer with Kinds of Kindness. Did you catch, though, that they scheduled, or Disney's releasing that opposite The Bike Riders, which they dumped?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
I don't, like, I've heard good things about The Bike Riders, too. So I'm a little surprised that they're, first of all, moving The Bike Riders like they have, and then putting them both so close to each other. Yeah, it's very odd to me because I thought The Bike Riders could have a chance to be an actor, some sort of nomination from that movie as well. Yeah, it's weird. It's very weird.
It was wild when they just, I guess, Searchlight that had it originally, and then they dumped The Bike Riders, and then Bike Riders was picked up elsewhere. So it's just very, it's an interesting play there by Disney, playing a little dirty pool, I think, with the scheduling of Kinds of Kindness, but. Oh yeah, such as business. Were there any? What were your most thrilling wins? I think I know one of them, but one that you were really excited about.
Well, obviously, Oppenheimer being my favorite movie, those victories were great. The cinematography win, the score win, the one that I got pumped about. It was Godzilla, right? Yeah, Godzilla is a it's a movie that I was just overwhelmed by the first time I saw it. I went back and saw it again and loved it just as much. Then I saw the black and white version. But for it to get represented at this year's Academy Awards and being the first ever Godzilla movie to win an Oscar. And I'm not even a huge Godzilla guy. I'm just obsessed with this film. And so I think there's a good argument to be made for the creator. I think there's a good argument to be made for Guardians. And so I wouldn't have been devastated if it lost, but it didn't. And it was represented. And I saw it coming only because, which is the same reason I saw Lily coming. That didn't happen. But the momentum for Godzilla was so overwhelming. And the love for these guys going around with their Godzilla toys and their Godzilla shoes and just the entire foundation of creators behind it being such likable people. And then a lot of people were wanting to see this movie represented at the Oscars, and what better way than for visual effects spending apparently $15 million on the film?
It's insane. It's insane.
Insane. It's insane.
I truly thought, campaigning aside and momentum aside, that the creator was the one that was going to take this. I didn't love the creator. I thought it fumbled the narrative a little bit, but the visual effects were incredible. And I always reference the bridge scene with the robot running, then that's just an incredible scene to me.
Yes,
it is. But you're right. When you talk about momentum and thinking back to any campaigning for the creator, there was none really for the creator. You didn't really see anything out there except for the random internet ad. Godzilla, what a wild, how many Godzilla movies have there been? Like 70 something or whatever? Yeah. And this is the first to be nominated, let alone win?
It's insane. And you think of like the Planet of the Apes movies never winning an Oscar and all of these just groundbreaking staples, these visual effects staples that never won an Oscar. And so while the creator was phenomenal across the board, I look at this Godzilla movie on the budget. You have to look at what the budget was and how good this specific Godzilla looks compared to some of the American movies where it's a $200 million budget. They don't look as good. This is a staple, in my opinion. So I'm so happy it got the love. I'm just so happy it won.
And we're getting more Godzilla in 2 weeks here with Godzilla X Kong.
Yeah. We'll see how good that is. I don't know.
You sound really excited for that, Austin. in terms of movies that weren't recognized, didn't get any love, whether that be nominees or wins, or nominations or wins, are there any that you would have liked to see get a little bit more love?
Well, The Holdovers is one where I wanted it to. It would have been a surprise for it to win anything else, but maybe screenplay this and that. Although I was happy with the screenplay wins. Divine Joy Randolph won. That's amazing. The big one for me is Across the Spider-Verse. You know, The Boy and the Heron's a good movie, but I would say it's lower down on my Studio Ghibli list. It's a film where, you know, he said, this is my last movie. Then he obviously said it wasn't his last movie. So there were a lot of things factoring into where I thought The Boy and the Heron could win and pull off the victory. But it's just not the strongest narrative that I've seen in a Studio Ghibli film. So for Spider-Verse to be as good as it was and as monumental as it was in animation, and to only get one nomination was already upsetting, but for it not to win. And I think maybe it was, well, we rewarded Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
We don't have to reward Across the Spider-Verse. A little bit of that going on. But yeah, I was pretty devastated because that movie was in my top three last year. And it was really good.
it's definitely the curse of the sequels when it comes to the Oscars. And yeah. Sean, Math Teacher Movies, talked about this last podcast, that you have a lot of sequels that don't get the love. And you think about back to Lord of the Rings and how mm-hmm. The Two Towers was such a monumental film, but it also was the bridge to Return of the King. And that's the one that ended up getting all the love. So what will the next Spider-Verse hold in terms of the Oscars? Who knows? It's interesting though. There definitely is a pattern when you look back at the Oscars and how they operate. And I wonder, as you said, with some of these more beloved films, by the larger masses being recognized, if that dynamic's going to shift a little bit, and if that paradigm is due for reinvention. But there's a couple that I have. This one I just put out there because I love this movie, even though it's ridiculous. But Saltburn, I thought, had a few areas that could have been nominated, could have been recognized. Society of the Snow was my upset pick, long shot upset pick for international, because I thought that was one of the most technically sound and well-executed films I've seen in a long time.
Yes, I agree.
Did you enjoy that?
Yes, it was. I actually, in terms of favorites, I liked it more than Zone of Interest. It was my favorite international film from last year. Phenomenal.
Absolutely loved it. The other one is All of Us Strangers. Especially when it comes to acting and directing. The acting was just incredible. Incredible in that film. The directing, the writing, I think it was fumbled by the studio a little bit in how it was rolled out late and people didn't really know what it was. But some of those performances, it's a really great film that kind of sticks with you. So I'm surprised that didn't get much more love.
In the same light, I think another fumbled movie was The Iron Claw.
A24,
all of its eggs in the baskets of Zone of Interest. They pushed everything that I think they wanted to push. Iron Claw came out so late in the game. It didn't have a festival premiere. It was supposed to, and then they got pushed. And that was a film that I think a lot of general audiences responded to. But because it was so late and it didn't really campaign, and talking to someone like Sean Chandler, he was like, yeah, I would have voted for it if I would have seen it. Because he didn't see it until 2 weeks after he voted for the HCA Awards. So, and I got it, I think, 2 days before I voted for Critics' Choice. And so I think they kind of fumbled the bag with that one. That was a movie that should have been represented somewhere across the board.
Which is surprising for A24, who are usually very much on the pulse of award season.
Yes.
I wonder sometimes with that one, I was thinking about this, if the Zac Efron of it all worried them a little bit, because he was great in the film. Absolutely astounding performance from Zac Efron, probably the best of his career. I don't know that people expected that going in. So I wonder if that held them back a little bit. They didn't quite know, you know, how to market this, how to deliver it. But still, it should have come out probably at least a month earlier.
Well, it reminds me of the whole Adam Sandler Uncut Gems thing. It's like no one expects a performance like this to come from this guy. And so once you get it, it almost takes a little, you have to shift your brain a little bit and say, okay, I used to look at him in this light. Now I have to look at him in this light. And so I don't know if some people are fully doing that when they're voting separating Sandler and separating Efron from the films from the past. So hopefully the next Zac Efron performance, and I would say the next Adam Sandler performance, I loved him in Hustle, but the next Efron performance can be that one, you know, under a great director, just people to say, okay, Zac Efron is this actor now. That's what, but then you got Ricky Stenicki. So I don't know.
Listen, they all get the money somehow, right? They as long as they're finding that balance, it's nice to see that he's great. Yeah. And the other thing, you know, this is actually kind of silly, but thinking back to it, you know, Iron Claw was probably made a couple of years ago. Ricky Stenicki, he probably made in like 3 weeks. But now that he's getting the recognition, he's going to get looked at for more of those dramatic roles, which is exciting. You know, it's good to see. He's been committed. You know, he's been in the industry for quite a while now.
A long time. And it's when he was young, too. He came in the game when he was young, and he was known as this guy. It's, you know, he's in the musicals, and he's kind of the pretty boy. But now I think he's still a good-looking guy. But now he has shifted into, I believe, a darn good actor, and one who can commit to a role that he, like he did to Iron Claw, you know, physically committed, but also I think mentally, the final scene of the movie, I'm like, this guy's all in. He's all in on this performance. And that's really cool to see from a guy like Zac Efron. So I want to see him again. I really hope we see more out of him.
The most love that movie got was in a Timex commercial during the Oscars. They showed that clip, the end of the movie. And I was like, what?
Man.
Oh my gosh.
So bummed.
Let's switch gears here a little bit and jump into talking about what's going on in the superhero world. We quite a bit of development both with DC and Marvel. Let's start with DC here. First and foremost, and I think I know that this upset you, the Batman 2 has been pushed back a year, I believe, which doesn't surprise me because it sounds like there hasn't been any actual development, like, you know, on the ground filming and stuff. But what do you think about this?
Well, people were like, you know, we get sequels 4 years after the original all the time. Why are you so bummed out? And I'm like, yeah, but I thought I was getting this one 3 years after. Well, I was getting this one next year. And so there's something about being 365 days away, and then you double that all of a sudden, and it bums me out. It's kind of like the Dune Part 2 thing. They kept moving it and shifting it, and I'm like, we're so close. So I think this is good for the film because obviously the strikes were impeding on the process, and this is a superhero movie that I'm okay with waiting on because you know how committed Matt Reeves is to making this franchise really, really good. And so if it is the best it can be because we have to wait an extra year, which stinks, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. And I expect this to be a top-tier comic book movie. Now that I'm waiting an extra year, I'm expecting it to be a top-tier comic book movie. So don't disappoint me or I'll be pissed.
I think you're telling Matt Reeves now, it better be a top-tier
comic book movie. Man. Come on, pal.
The reason that I'm okay with this is I think it gives James Gunn a little bit more breathing room with the launch of the MCU and with Superman slated for next summer. Wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if Superman pushes a little bit, given that they have a little bit more breathing room. It gives them the space if they need to take a little bit of extra time, but they need to get the launch of the DCU right. And having an Elseworlds film introduced right after you're relaunching always felt a little strange to me. But, you know, hopefully this works in its favor and they can make it work for them. The other big news we got with DC was just late this week that they're moving forward with a live action Teen Titans movie. And this is such a fascinating leak to me because I don't think Gunn has confirmed it yet on his socials, which I'm sure he will have something to say about it soon. The fact that he hasn't denied it probably tells you that it's true. But this is such an interesting, I guess, link to what is popular in the comics, because the Teen Titans, especially the new Teen Titans comic runs, are extremely popular with fans, with comic fans. So it's a nice inroads, I think, to introduce something different into onto the big screen when it comes to the DCU. What are your thoughts on this? And if you had to pick a director, Austin, to shepherd this in, who would it be? And that's unfair a little bit because I was thinking about this laying in bed last night. But
man, that's the director's tough. I think Teen Titans speaks to a lot of different groups of people. You have the young kids who grew up watching the TV shows. that were just, I mean, I'm very, I have a lot of nostalgia for the early 2000s Teen Titans show. Then you have Teen Titans Go. And that's not one that speaks to me specifically, but a lot of the younger generation, they're massive fans of that, as well as the comic book run. So all of these different fan bases, and then somebody on Twitter, they said, oh, it's going to make $1 billion. I'm like, yeah, it's not going to make $1 billion. But I think this could do surprisingly well. And if DC manages to get this out before Marvel gets out the Young Avengers, then I think they're going to have a leg up. And the fact that they're already confirmed to write this, and I've not heard a lot about the Young Avengers, they're going to have a leg up on the competition, because that's kind of what the Teen Titans is. And, you know, the Teen Titans is fascinating because there's Teen Titans East Coast, there's Teen Titans West Coast, there's Teen Titans International. A lot of different groups of superheroes in the comics. So they could build an entire franchise around the groups of the Teen Titans. I don't know if you watched the original animated show, Joe.
Oh, yes.
But there are 50, 60 members of the Teen Titans. So you have a lot to choose from. And this could be the opportunity that we see the Blue Beetle come in and join, right?
Austin, right? I love that you said that, because when I first read this news, I said, now it makes sense why Blue Beetle is a carryover to the DCU. He's going to be probably a big part of their Teen Titans.
I think that works out really, really well. So I would love to I would love to see this sooner rather than later. In terms of a director, man, that's tough.
It's a hard one, right?
What did you have one in mind, Joe? That you're, because I'm trying to think of like who does like younger groups of,
yeah.
I don't know.
I have a really off the cuff wild one here.
Okay. I think I do too. Let's see.
This is Cooper Rafe. I have Cooper Rafe from Cha-Cha Real Smooth and Shit House. He gets that teen angst. He gets that young, the emotions, but delivers it in an acceptable way. And I've always thought that he would do really well with a young superhero if he wanted to go that route and, you know, quote unquote, get the bag. But I think that he is such an artistic director that he would be someone that would capitalize on what the Teen Titans could be and the history that it has, but reintroduce it to the masses through the medium of film in a very accessible but unique way. Kind of like how James Gunn took Guardians and brought them together. I don't know why. I just feel like Rafe could do that.
I love that. Cooper Rafe is one of my, I mean, both movies are top tier in my opinion. I'm thinking, I don't know if you got a chance to see Are You There, Goddess Me, Margaret?
Oh, yeah.
As well as The Edge of 17, Kelly Freeman Craig.
Yeah,
she is
a,
I think the tone specifically of Edge of 17, as well as a coming of age vibe and incorporating humor, because we know Teen Titans, we got to incorporate some humor in there, but then allowing her to see what she can do with a blockbuster, because I love when these smaller independent directors, kind of like a Cooper Rafe, can come in and let's see how you do with a big budget, things like that.
Yeah.
But I know with Kelly Freeman Craig and Cooper Rafe, you're going to have the heart and you're going to have the coming of age vibe. You're going to have that teen feel. I mean, it's the Teen Titans, that teen feel that is so relatable, but they're superheroes. So I think if you keep the relatability intact prior to caring about what's going to happen with the action, all of this, I think that's going to come across really well. So I think Kelly Freeman Craig would be, and you got to, you know, she's coming in and getting her opportunity to cast really good up and coming actors, not just big names, good up and coming actors. So I would love to see her tackle Teen Titans.
That's a great choice. I love both those choices. I think they're off the beaten path, and they're people that deserve that opportunity to see what they can do. And when you're talking about potential superhero fatigue, and you want to, especially establishing a new studio here, and you want to distinguish yourself from what's been out there, bring in some new voices. It's time.
Yes.
It's absolutely time.
Yes, 100%.
Speaking of fatigue and such, Marvel, their leadership, I guess Disney leadership in terms of Iger and the rest of the crew, seem to be having a little bit of fatigue, and they want to, you know, it's been documented, hit pause a little bit on all the projects that they've had rolling and pull back a little bit to focus on quality over quantity. The news broke this week that it looks like Eternals 2 is not moving forward. This has not been confirmed, but it's kind of taken on a life of its own on the interwebs after Iger made the comment that there's been some projects that have been quietly shelved, quietly canceled, if you will. This doesn't totally surprise me, but I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
It doesn't surprise me. Eternals, and that was really the beginning of Marvel becoming this really divisive thing, because prior to that time period where Eternals came out, and look, if you're asking me, I appreciate the fact that we're getting movies that are a little different in the MCU, even if some of them don't work, and I liked Eternals. But that was around the time where they're throwing everything. They're throwing everything at us. They're doing Eternals and this and that. And I was talking to my friend the other day, and he hasn't watched a Marvel project in a year and a half. And we used to go to every movie together. And he said, we're so oversaturated with having to keep up with everything going on. Like he said, I will never watch the Marvels because I have to have one TV show, another TV show. And of course, you had to watch the first Captain Marvel. We had to see all of that just to understand the context of the Marvels. And he's like, I don't have time for that. And so as a comic book fan, it's really cool seeing this all come to life and all these things that are interconnected. But looking at it from a general audience standpoint, I understand why they're not going out and seeing all of these movies, because everything's either connected or it just doesn't have the same vibe that the first 20-something movies of the MCU had. And so approaching it from that standpoint, yeah, I understand why they're not going forward with some of these projects that didn't quite work or some of these characters that aren't as big. But at the same time, you don't want to overly commit to that, because I do like original properties. And I don't want to completely rely on bringing Iron Man back from the dead. Captain America, Steve Rogers is back, even though we've moved forward with a new Captain America. It's like, there has to be a middle ground. Absolutely. And so I'm okay with less movies. I'm okay with quality over quantity, but I also want original projects and I want some new characters to be introduced. So don't let that get to your head. Oh, we can't introduce new characters because they're not going to perform well. Oh, we can't do a Shang-Chi 2, even though people love the first one. We have to keep thinking original. And so I hope they don't let that get to their heads. And I am glad they're focusing on quality, but don't let that keep you from introducing, you know, someone brand like a Nova. And I know they're probably moving forward with a Nova, but don't let that keep you from introducing someone like a Nova. And Ryan Gosling is going to play Nova.
Ryan Gosling. We should mention with Nova, the news came out this week as well, based on a conversation with the head of television streaming and animation, Brad Winterbaum, who basically said that there are plans to bring Nova into live action, and it's in quote unquote really early development. And in the same statement or same interview, I should say, there was talk about how Marvel is shifting how they approach their projects. And instead of kind of saying like, we're doing this, run with it, they're developing things and then deciding what goes, which is, you know, a typical studio, which is, you know, I think they got away with it for a good amount of time, but it's time to, you know, shift. And I think that makes sense, probably mostly for the bottom line when it comes to Iger looking at trying to get Disney on the right track so he can finally step away.
All right, see ya, because he tried that once. It didn't work.
Finally, right? But I'm with you there. I enjoyed Eternals a lot. It was different. It was the not only the characters that were introduced, but the pacing, the visuals. It was a different way of storytelling, and I really appreciated that. I would like to see more of that. I think that's what ultimately is going to bring success in the future. I worry that Marvel is starting to fall into what DC did from the beginning when they launched Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman and all of that, is responding to fans too much and not sticking to a creative vision. When you don't stick to a creative vision, you're going to make mistakes every step of the way. And that's where I think they're at, unfortunately. And I appreciate that they're taking the step back to refocus and figure out how they want to move forward. And there's some signs about what they have the most confidence in, right? So think about the Blu-ray releases of some of their series recently. You had Moon Knight Season 1. You had Falcon and the Winter Soldier Season 1. I'm trying to think of the one that was listed as the complete series, and everyone was like, well, there goes that one.
No more of that.
You know, but there's obviously some... Not that there wasn't intention before, but the intention has shifted a little bit. And I'd be fascinated to see what Comic-Con looks like this year, if they use that opportunity to redefine their upcoming slate. And I think for both, you know, DC and Marvel, you have the opportunity to make a splash there.
Yeah, that's, and it's interesting because you think back of the Comic-Con days of old and how, you would get so pumped as to what's coming out through, you know, Tom Hiddleston coming on stage as Loki, yep. and you get these big announcements and you get all of these cool things. And even before it was one of the latest phases, Kevin Feige did the big event where he announced everything. And now it just, it doesn't feel like every movie is a big deal. No. It feels like every three or four movies is just like a chunk of the next phase of Marvel. Whereas every Marvel movie used to be an event, even the ones, even the ones that weren't as big and great, like, you know, Thor 2, and it was still like, oh my God, the new Marvel movie's coming out. What are we going to do? And now it's just like, oh, there's another Marvel movie. And then there's two more after that. So if they do scale down and do a couple per year, maybe we'll start getting that feeling of, oh, I will say though, I do think Guardians Volume 3 was kind of an event because
absolutely.
Right. Because James Gunn still had that. You could tell it was a James Gunn film, full control, but also it was almost the end of an era of that Guardians era in the MCU. So I hope that's not over with. And I hope the next Marvel movie, they put a lot into building this next one up as the next big Marvel event. And I hope I feel that because I haven't felt it in a while.
Well, when Blade comes out in 2037, we should reconvene and see what that feels
and,
like.
And my daughter already has two kids of her own. Can't wait. That's going to be great.
All right. We have to touch on real quick the news that's happening with another franchise here. And this is around Scream 7. So, of course, Melissa Barrera was fired by Screen Gems back in a couple months ago at this point. For comments around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Israeli-Hamas conflict, let me better frame that. And then we saw that Jenna Ortega was not returning, which for those who were following all along, she likely wasn't returning due to scheduling conflicts.
Yes.
So there was a little bit of timing there that made things seem a little conflated. But there was the film's been up in kind of, you know, purgatory for a little bit, people not knowing where it was going to go. And I have said from the beginning, Neve Campbell was coming back. There was never a question in my mind. And just last week, she shared a screenshot of She shared a picture of her script for Scream 7. So she is returning with Kevin Williamson directing. And I'm just, I guess, in general, Austin, your thoughts on that? And do you, there's a lot of people that are saying, like, boycott this film and Neve doesn't stand with Melissa. Like, what are your thoughts on all this?
It's tough to parse through because the whole Neve doesn't stand with Melissa thing. I mean, if it's a script that she responded to and it's a reason for her to come back, I don't know if Neve Campbell would come back if it didn't have all of those things intact. Like, it has to be something that she feels worthy of coming back to. But at the same time, it does kind of feel like the studio saying, look over here. Neve Campbell's coming back. All right. Everybody's like, oh, look at Neve. Wait a second. Weren't we just mad about that? Neve Campbell's coming back. So it's kind of like one of those things where let's go in a different direction, a completely different direction. Let's rely on nostalgia. Let's bring it back. And so that's kind of like, I don't know if that's the way that you should have done it in the first place. And you should have even fired her in the first place, all of those things. But then part of me is like, man, I don't think Neve would come back if she didn't like it. You know what I mean? I feel like Neve Campbell has a love and a passion. She said before, I'm not going to come back if I don't like the script. So
yep.
I'm so divided on how I feel about this. I'm not overly excited now that we've went through all of this stuff. I'm just kind of like, well, let's see what happens. Maybe it could be good. And is it going to be as creative as the other two recent Scream movies that we got? I don't know. So I don't know, Joe. I'm very torn on this entire thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I always caution that we only see what's reported and what comes out in the news. I wonder what inroads have been made with Melissa behind the scenes, things like that. You know, I'm not defending Screen Gems whatsoever. But you know, we only know half of it. I've always said that from the beginning, and there were rumors within the industry based on some people that I had talked to who had said that there was, you know, she had been talked to in the past about like comments that were being made, not only with this conflict, but with other social media posts and stuff. And they were trying to get her to pull back and trying to speak with her and that she wouldn't speak to them. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But all that to say, you know, I do believe they see the value in Melissa Barrera and what she brought to the Scream films. And I do think we'll see her back in the future. This past weekend, she made a comment at one of the festivals that she was at with some of the OG Scream people. Someone had asked her, are you upset that Sam's story ended this way, or something to that effect? And her response was, oh no, Sam's story is not done. Sam's story isn't over. And she said, you know, I think she alluded to the fact that, like, should Scream Gems sell the franchise, she would be back in a heartbeat. So
interesting. You
know, all that to say, I said, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but that seems a little bit clear from her perspective. But
wow.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot to be said there. With Nev Campbell, she did say in her post, I'm very happy and proud to say I've been asked in the most respectful way to bring Sydney back to the screen, and I couldn't be more thrilled. So I would love to be a fly on the wall and just hear what that conversation was like, because I imagine Nev Campbell, given how vocal she is to stand up for her rights and, you know, what she's brought to the franchise, what that conversation was about Melissa as well. It's just, I'm not going to boycott a whole series for this. I'm going to go into it with, you know, some question marks, but I just hope that everyone kind of is respected moving forward.
I'm interested to see if we get a IMDb ratings bomb or not on this one, because, you know, there's still that large group of people that will do something like that. And I get people being upset. I really do. But
absolutely.
Again, if she said the conversations went the way, because like you said, she has stood up for things before that she believes in, and she should. And so the fact that she's back on board and she's taking this role once again tells me that things are going the way that she hoped they would go. So I am looking forward to it just through that perspective, just through her perspective of, okay, I'm back. Let's see what happens. You know,
love that. Love that. All right. We are going to jump into our last segment here, a game that we like to play. We call it Smash Cuts. Very original here. All right. And here you go. You'll enjoy this. Ready?
Smash Cuts.
All right.
So we play a game called Smash Cuts. And what I'll do is I'll present a few topics to you, and you're going to tell me smash or pass, and you can tell me why. But they kind of run the gamut here. So we're going to start off with this one. You ready?
Okay.
Smash or pass the Crow trailer?
Smash. I wasn't really looking forward to this movie, but the trailer kind of sold me.
Yep. Yeah, I'm there with you. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Looked good. Really good. Yeah.
Smash or pass Giancarlo Esposito as Professor X, but with the condition that he's not in a wheelchair.
I'm going to smash him as Professor X. Let me tell you, but I'm going to pass. You have to, I'm sorry, pal. You got to be in the wheelchair if you're Professor X. That's a given. You got to do it.
Yep. Smash or pass Bill Hader voicing the Cat in the Hat.
I'm going to do a hesitant smash. I remember him saying after it, oh, I'm going to do horror movies and things like this. And now he's Cat in the Hat. Now, if they make it a horror film, sure. But it could also be Winnie the Pooh. So I'm going to do a hesitant smash.
You know that's coming down the road. The Cat in the Hat. Oh, no. The Cat in the Hat with a bat. Smash or pass? This is a two-parter potentially, because I'm pretty sure that you'll be on board with this. Smash or pass the Hot Brown? You know what I'm referring to.
Pass. Yeah, you know, I'm going to go pass. Yeah, I've just never really liked him. Never really liked him. Yeah.
For context for those listening, I was in Louisville for a conference, and the choices at the hotel for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, breakfast and lunch mainly, was a buffet or the Hot Brown, which is loaded, essentially like an open-faced sandwich in a skillet loaded
ham,
with cheese and
turkey.
Stuff.
Yeah. It's a weird, everybody says it's a Kentucky thing, but I'm like, it's kind of a Louisville thing, because it's not a big deal here in Lexington, but in Louisville, you go there, you get a Hot Brown, and every time I get one, I'm like, you know, so I've just never been a big fan.
Everyone that got it enjoyed it while they were eating it, but then when we had to go to like a conference session after, they were like, oh God, like I just want to go to bed.
It's just so much of everything, and they load it with cheese, and I liked, but it's something about the combination of a Hot Brown that's never really appealed to me. Don't let anyone from Kentucky hear me say this, because they're all going to disagree with me. Yeah. Every single one of them.
It was wild, but you know, hey, every place has their thing, right?
Yeah, you got to experience it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Austin, always a pleasure to have you on. I want to take a little time to allow you to share what's going on over on your channel. You're killing it on YouTube, as always. What's happening in the Flick Fan Nation?
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, we're the Oscars were last week. We're still covering the Oscars. I'm going to do some way too early predictions for next year, this upcoming week, which I know people absolutely love. And then I have a cool ranking coming of taking the last 15 Best Picture winners, and I'm ranking those. Nice. But as always, I'm reviewing the latest movies, latest things on streaming. We've had a couple of Netflix shows this year that were actually really good. And man, I love getting in front of this camera and making YouTube videos. It's my absolute favorite thing to do. You guys can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. I love me some Letterboxd, Joe.
Absolutely.
It's the way to keep me organized when it comes to movie watching. But thank you so much, Joe, for having me on. I love this. I love the name Smash Cuts, by the way. I don't know who thought of that, but you're a genius, whoever you are. I think it's a great idea as a new name, and the rebrand is fantastic. And I really love what you guys are doing on here. So thank you so much for having me. It's a great time.
Thank you, sir. And I'll also give a little kudos to you. You mentioned that you're comfortable in front of the camera. You love that. And it shows in all of your videos. So with in a world where everyone wants to get in front of YouTube and in front of the camera, I should say, it definitely comes through when you're giving your videos, whether they're clips on TikTok or Instagram or your full length on YouTube. So keep that up. Keep the family well, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you, Joe.
See ya.